Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Thank you for spending some time with me today. And it's Monday, and here at All of It, it means we get some reviews and previews of all the content that's out there, from books to music to podcast to this week, screens, big and small. Joining us now are Aisha Harris, senior staff editor at the New York Times covering culture, and Willa Paskin, TV critic for Slate and host of the Decoder Ring podcast. Aisha and Willa, welcome to All of It.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for having me too.
All right, let's start with the big screens. We're going to start with some films. The film Yesterday from Danny Boyle and Richard Curtis, and it stars Himesh Patel. He's a struggling musician named Jack who exists in a world where the Beatles never existed, or at least he's the only person who really knows their music. So Aisha, Curtis is known for writing, you know, sort of nice romantic comedies like Notting Hill, and Boyle directed Trainspotting and 127 Hours, and this is a movie about music. So what kind of movie is this? Is this a romantic comedy? Is it a music film? What is it?
It's definitely way more heavy on the romantic comedy aspect, which I found kind of surprising. And part of the movie's fault, in my opinion, is that like it doesn't really know what to do with the very interesting concept of what had happened if the Beatles like never existed, which is like a weird thing to contemplate. But I think that this focuses a lot on the main character's relationship with his manager and their relationship to each other, and not as much on the Beatles aspect, which I found kind of disappointing, actually.
It must have been actually kind of fun to write, and we'll listen to this clip, because there are just a lot of jokes and moments when you can smile based on what life would be like without the Beatles, and if this fella's trying to convince people that he has written these Beatles songs. So listen to a clip from Yesterday.
About the song, the title, Hey Jude. Jude is just, it's a bit old fashioned.
That was the kid's name, right?
What kid?
That the song's about.
Oh, the kid, yes, the sad kid.
Now, let me just give you this advice, right? Song title. I won't charge you a penny for it as well. Hey Dude.
Hey, dude, are you sure?
He's right. That's so much better.
Is he? Is it?
Yeah. Hey, dude, don't make it fast. Definitely going to be one of the best songs of the generation.
Hey,
dude. Don't make it bad.
So, Aisha, while that's funny, does that joke get old during the course of the film?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the many jokes that they use. And I think that, I mean, I didn't find it funny, although the audience that I saw it with thought it was hilarious. I just think that the movie, it's a weird concept to think of, but then it pretends there's all these other things that don't exist as well after this occurrence happens. And it doesn't really make any point about, like, really digging into what would happen if the Beatles didn't exist and what kind of music wouldn't exist. And it also just kind of, as many people have already pointed out, it kind of ignores the fact that hip-hop is a thing, and hip-hop probably would have existed even without the Beatles. So why is that completely, like, out of this realm of possibility? It's a weird movie.
I guess if you're a Beatles fan, you might enjoy it, question mark.
Maybe.
All right, Toy Story 4. Now, the first Toy Story came out in 1995, so conceivably we have listeners who saw the first one as a kid and maybe have a kid of their own now. And the story has grown to Andy, the little boy, he's now in college. So who is this Toy Story about? Aisha.
Well, this Toy Story is really about Woody trying to essentially find himself. They invite some new characters, including Forky, who I think is probably one of the best characters the Toy Story franchise has had to date. He is a fork, even though his name is Forky, who is created by the new little girl who, at the end of Toy Story 3, all of our favorite toys are now property of. And he's created, and he's voiced, and it's basically he's a fork who doesn't know why he exists and wants to keep throwing himself in the trash. So that's like a recurring theme that's happening. And then also it's about Woody trying to discover what his life is like now that he's no longer the favorite toy. So it's, there's a lot of existential stuff happening here. I'm still not entirely sure if we needed Toy Story 4, though I enjoyed it a lot. I thought the third movie ended so perfectly. But it was really interesting to see these characters again in a new light 9 years after the last film.
And for people who need a visual on Forky, it's a plastic fork with like a pipe cleaner around it. And let's say play a clip of when Forky first gets introduced to the other toys. This is from Toy Story 4.
Oh, he did go to kindergarten.
I knew it. No,
you're trying
guys,
to get
listen,
Bonnie in trouble.
No, of course not.
You could have been confiscated.
What does that mean?
Taken away.
No!
Or worse, you could have been lost.
No, guys, listen. Bonnie had a great day in class, and we're going on a road trip. Road trip?
Vacation!
But then something really weird happened. Bonnie made a friend in class.
She's already making friends.
No, she literally made a new friend.
Hey, it's okay. Come on out, that's it. Come on, there you go.
Come on, let's get you out of there. You got this. Good. Everyone, I want you to meet Forky.
Yale, Bob Hat.
Look how long his arms are.
It seems like there's some sort of deep messages, Aisha, about people having toys, having existential crises. Is this something that an adult could go see on their own?
Well, I don't have children, and I did go and see it on my own with my fiancé. We both love all the Pixar movies. I mean, that's the thing about Pixar is that, like, even the, like, I don't want to say lesser films, but the films that are not necessarily, don't necessarily rise to the, you know, Toy Story 2s or the Toy Story 3s of the canon, I think are still enjoyable for everyone, whether they're adults or children. And because the messages are so deep, I think a lot of it will go over kids' heads, and adults will find it really interesting to contemplate, like, these toys having similar feelings about their own existence as adults do.
My guest is Aisha Harris from the senior staff editor at the New York Times. We're talking about reviews and previews of big screens and small. We'll get to TV and streaming soon, but we've got a couple more big movies to get through. All right, I was in the airport yesterday, Aisha, and I was the entire terminal where the people movers were Lion King promotion. Screens and screens and walls of Lion King. So to get people up to speed, it's a remake of that, you know, of course, epic cartoon. It's being described as live action, but it's is that accurate or is it CGI? What is this?
It's definitely CGI. The term live action gets thrown out a lot with these types of movies, but like there are no humans in this movie. So unlike the Jungle Book remake, which was also directed by Jon Favreau a few years ago, which had Mowgli as like the human character, there are no humans in The Lion King. So this is all CGI. In fact, I think the way they've described it is that they're trying to make it look almost like documentary-like, like wildlife-like. The trailer itself kind of looks like a trailer for Planet Earth or any one of those nature documentaries. But it's going to be really interesting to hear all of these very famous voices, you know, grafted onto the faces of these lions and warthogs and all these other animals.
You have Beyonce playing Nala, Donald Glover's Simba, Billy Eichner's in there, Seth Rogen. Is this one sort of critic proof, do you think? My apologies to you.
I definitely think that no matter what, it's going to make millions and millions of dollars. The Lion King is definitely one of the, one of the most loved Disney movies of all time, I think, and especially millennials like myself who saw it in the theaters as children. It's just stayed in our mind for so long that I think that no matter how, like, not good it is, people will go see it because of that factor of remembering seeing it as a kid and having your own kids or nieces and nephews who you want to go and take and relive that experience again.
So here's something for the grown-ups. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Quentin Tarantino's film, it's got a lot of critical acclaim, a lot of anticipation, big names, DiCaprio, Pitt, Al Pacino. What did you think?
Well, I have not seen this movie yet.
Oh, exciting.
But, it premiered at Cannes and, like you said, got a lot of really great reviews. There was a little bit of controversy. There was during the Cannes run, there was a New York Times reporter who asked about Margot Robbie's character. Margot Robbie plays Sharon Tate. And there's a question about, like, how much of her character gets to speak or has any speaking lines, that caused a little bit of controversy. But I do think it's a very interesting cast, and it's the first time DiCaprio and Pitt have been together on screen. So I think that in itself is going to be very interesting. And the fact that Tarantino is claiming that this could be his final film, his final feature film, which I think will stir interest. Whether or not that's true or not, who knows? But that's what he's suggesting might be the case.
All right, Aisha, thank you so much for helping us out with the big screen. Willa, let's turn to you. Willa Paskin is a TV critic for Slate. Stranger Things is back for a third season on Netflix. Willa, you recently tweeted, I watched the first three eps of Stranger Things and semi-fast forward the rest, and honestly, this is a ringing endorsement. Enjoyed a lot. What is enjoyable about Stranger Things third time around?
It's just basically a little more comedic because they've sort of run out of new plot. So they are again fighting the creatures from the upside down, but it's just kind of like more 80s. They're older. There's like lots of montages of 11 wearing fun clothes from the Gap, like learning how to dress. It feels a little bit more like an 80s teen movie, which is what happens when your, 11 year olds start to be 15.
And is the creepy still there?
Oh yeah. I did fast forward that part though.
That's so funny. Are you creeped out by the creepy?
No, I just am sort of like in triage all the time on TV shows because it's my job. So like I will watch a certain amount and then I just like need to know what happens. And I pretend to myself that I'm going to go back and watch them. But I don't always.
Okay, this is a controversial show for some people. Big Little Lies on HBO. It had its second season. And of course, it follows these women in affluent Monterey Beach. And some people thought it should have ended last season. I'm not giving anything away. These women end up lying about killing one of the husbands. And a lot of people thought, that's it. That's the end of the series. And then it came back for a second season. Where do you stand on the second season of Big Little Lies?
Well, I'm mostly anti-second seasons. I'm mostly I just want TV shows to be really short. But I think the second season has been very fun. I thought the first couple episodes of it were very good, and it's I think the fourth or fifth episode just aired last night, and it's possible they like are getting a little crazy. Like I don't know exactly what they're doing, but it's very enjoyable to watch these actresses do like be really great actresses and such beautiful scenery, and it's really fun. I think people are still enjoying it even if it's not actually very good, if that makes sense.
It absolutely makes sense. But the actresses are fantastic. It's Laura Dern, Nicole Kidman, Reese Witherspoon, Zoe Kravitz. Who am I forgetting? Oh, Shailene Woodley. And an addition this season, Meryl Streep. Meryl Streep playing the mother of the man who was killed. She may be the scariest thing on television right now, Willa.
She's very creepy and very good. She plays a character called Mary Louise, which is actually Meryl Streep's real name, which is like kind of an interesting decision that they've made. And she seems like sort of mousy, quiet mother-in-law, but then she's like a little odd and has definitely a lot of very strong convictions, and she is sort of roped Nicole Kidman's character Celeste into a custody battle that is very excruciating. She's like a sort of eerie weirdo who definitely thinks she's doing right but is definitely doing wrong, but she's really not phoning it in. She's like very excellent. It's really fun to watch.
Let's take a listen to Meryl Streep from Big Little Lies.
Hi. Hi, Madeline. Yes.
So nice to see
I'm
you again.
I'm Celeste's friend, yes.
How have you been?
Good. The kids are good. How are you?
I can't complain. Actually, I can. My son is dead.
But Celeste tells me that you continue to be so helpful with her and the boys, and
she should just get a proper housekeeper. You're very short.
Excuse me?
I don't mean it in a negative way.
Oh.
Maybe I do. I find little people to be untrustworthy.
My apologies. It's just that I pride myself on being a very good judge of character, but you have always presented such a difficult read. You know, you seem like a nice person, loving, but also you strike me as a wanter.
Oh, a wanter.
You know, there are people in life who content themselves with what they have, and then there are others who just want.
I'm not a wanter.
Oh, you don't have to take it personally. Anyway, I'm a wanter myself. You know what I want? I want Perry back. I want to know what happened that night, and I'm very tempted to ask you, but I doubt I would get the truth, would I?
Your son lost his balance and he fell.
Yes, that seems to be the company line, depending on whose company you keep.
Mary Louise.
Madeline and I were just talking.
Oh my gosh, should we just give her the Emmy now?
she'll probably get one.
Aisha, do you want to weigh in on Big Little Lies?
I mean, I agree with Willa in the fact that I think that this season is kind of unnecessary, and I don't know what exactly it's building up to in terms of just the meaning and reason, but it's really fun to watch Meryl Streep play like at her Meryl Streepiest. It's just really great.
My guests are Aisha Harris from the New York Times and Willa Paskin from Slate. We're talking about things on screens, big and small, you might want to check out this month. Willa, there's a limited-run British series. We know you like short series. Years and Years on HBO, starring Emma Thompson. She's great. It's kind of the summer of Emma Thompson, but it's gotten mixed reviews. What's the show about?
It's sort of like a fast... It sort of starts in the present day, and then it kind of fast-forwards ahead for the family. And it's sort of set in like a heightened, crazy political, like geopolitical climate that's sort of similar to ours, but it's just British, in which, you know, the world is essentially falling apart, and there's various international crises and refugee crises and a sort of new prime minister in England who's like a kind of deranged populist. It's like the world is sort of getting more and more frenzied around this family, and it follows this family very closely, instead, like, who are being sort of buffeted by the increased craziness of the world around them. It's kind of like, you know, the thing about, like, if you put a frog in a pot of water and you start to boil the water, it, like, doesn't jump out, whereas if you put it in a hot pot, it jumps out. It's like, what happens if you raise the temperature of the world around this family? And it has been getting mixed reviews because it's totally imperfect, but it just, there's so much going on that is actually very fun to watch as well. Or, like, it can be a little nerve-jangly, but it's pretty propulsive. Like, it's pretty entertaining even for its flaws.
All right, let's talk about The Loudest Voice, a miniseries on Showtime starring Russell Crowe as Roger Ailes, an unrecognizable Russell Crowe. What period of time does this film, this miniseries, cover in Ailes' life?
It starts in the mid-1990s with the founding of Fox News, which Ailes basically was the mastermind of, sort of with Rupert Murdoch's backing, and it goes through to his death sort of last in 2017 or 2018. And every episode picks a year and sort of focuses on what was happening at that time. So I think the second episode is in 2001, right at 9/11. And then it sort of jumps to Obama's election. And it sort of continues in that fashion, sort of focusing on like a particularly potent year in Roger Ailes' increased paranoia and power. It's pretty well done. It falls into this category. There's a bunch of these shows. Chernobyl, When They See Us is another one where there's sort of about a moment in history that's like very fraught and uncomfortable and not necessarily at all fun to think about. It's a little, but unlike those other two series that I just named, it's just sort of just much more like a straightforward biopic. It sort of like wants to be more of like a Sorkin Steve Jobs number. So it does go down a little bit easier, even though it is about someone who really warped American politics in a really hugely influential way.
My guests are Aisha Harris and Willa Paskin. We're talking about what to watch on screens, big and small. Okay, I saved the Marvel film for last. You can both weigh in if you want, because we have sort of a very, it's very polarizing when we talk about Marvel films on public radio. But I'm going to go for it because we actually had one of the stars of the film as a guest. Jake Gyllenhaal was in studio. This is Spider-Man Far From Home. So, Aisha, from the Marvel Cinematic Universe, where are we, given Endgame was an end game? Where does the Spider-Man take place?
I know, right? I was really hoping it would be the end. But of course it's not. Spider-Man kind of falls in this weird place where after the world has been saved in Avengers Endgame, now it's kind of back to like more contained and more insular issues. Essentially, Spider-Man, now played by Tom Holland, as he was in the Avengers movies, he is like, after all the Avengers stuff has happened, he just wants to go back to being like a normal kid. And they take a class trip to Europe, and now it's just kind of like Spider-Man in Europe. And Jake Gyllenhaal plays the villain, Mysterio. I actually kind of like Jake Gyllenhaal in this role. He like starts off kind of not subdued, but not as like crazy out there as we've seen him be in more recent roles. And then eventually he gets to getting like really kind of weird and out there, but in a way that I think is calibrated that works with the film. So yeah, it's fun. I didn't really think about it much after the fact. But it's enjoyable and it's funny and it's like a fun teen comedy. There's a lot of humor in this one.
Well, when Jake Gyllenhaal was in studio, we were talking about we had talked about a very serious one-man show that he had done at the Public, and just sort of at the end, I was like, "Hey, you're in Spider-Man," and this is what he had to say: "Spider-Man.
Yes.
Is that this summer?
That is July 5th, I believe. Yes.
Can you give me the log line?
The log line. Oh my God.
Do you know?
No, I don't know the log line. I do know that Spider-Man is far from home in this one.
And shall I take this?
That's
one?
The Would subtitle. Like yeah.
Spider-Man is far from
you
home.
You can take that. Sure. Yeah, he's far from home, and there's it's pretty cool. I have to say, it was a pretty darn fun to make, and
it's
I think
in
it's
London?
Really fun. It takes place in London, in Prague, in Venice. It takes place all around Europe. Because they go on a school trip, and some hijinks ensues.
Of course.
Yeah.
So basically, he gave the same review you did.
He's just happy to be there, I guess.
My guests have been Aisha Harris of the New York Times and Willa Paskin from Slate and host of the Decoder Ring podcast. Aisha and Willa, thanks for walking us through screens big and small.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up next, WQXR's creative director Clemency Burton Hill stops by for this week's installment of All Things Classical. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.